terror continues, but no one believes him.
That's a shark, and I know what a shark looks like because I've seen one up close. And you better do something about this one, because I don't intend to go through that hell again.
After the sensational return of Jaws to the screen, what could possibly be more terrifying than...
Carrie!
Jaws 2, rated PG. Friday, at theaters everywhere.
On this episode of Adam's Corner, we are very fortunate to be joined by Mr. John D. Hancock, who was the original director of Jaws 2 before a certain event took place that resulted in him being discharged from the production, unfortunately. So we wanted to get his story, his side of the story on what happened on Jaws 2. And I figured there's no better person to tell that story than Mr. Hancock himself. And he fortunately agreed to come on the show and tell us exactly what happened about Jaws 2 and all of that. Before we get started, just want to say that he also is the director of two films that hold a huge place in many film buffs' heart from the 70s. Let's Scare Jessica to Death from 1971. And Bang the Drum Slowly. Both of those are films that a lot of us have a strong fondness for. So we want to thank you for your work on those two films. But anyway, we'll get past all of that, and we'll let you go ahead and tell the story about Jaws 2 and what happened and how you, well, I guess first how you got involved with it, and then what happened after.
Dick Zanuck hired me. Zanuck produced a whole bunch of wonderful pictures, and we became friends. He'd like that. I did a short about businessmen that play touch football in Central Park that was nominated for an Academy Award, and he loved that. And he was very fond of Let's Scare Jessica to Death. So really, on the basis of those two things, he wanted me to do the Jaws sequel. And I hesitated to do it because it was a sequel, and I had other projects that I was trying to get on, but I wasn't moving them forward like I wanted. I mean, they weren't getting funded. So I thought, well, it'll make a lot of money and maybe will set me up for, you know, being able to do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I agreed to do it in a very foolish moment. It wasn't clear at that point what a great genius Steve Spielberg was, or I wouldn't have tried to follow in those footsteps. But I've always had a kind of... courage and dumb go ahead, and so I plunged into doing it, and I really got into the violence of it and the scariness of it, and worked very hard on the script. My wife and I wrote the script together, and what really happened was that I ran afoul of a long time struggle between Dick Zanuck and Sid Sheinberg. They had gotten at cross purposes in terms of each was married to an actress. And on the first Jaws, each had promised the role of Roy Scheider's wife to their wife. And each said to the other, I think my wife will leave me if I don't deliver this role. And the guy with the money won, Sid Sheinberg, and Zanuck's wife left him. And not immediately, but, you know, within a decent period of years. That had been further exacerbated by the overages on the first picture, which tripled its shooting schedule and budget. And there was a lot of shouting on, well, can't you control him? Well, he's your guy, Sid. You know, there was a lot of bad blood between Zanuck and Sheinberg. So I was Zanuck's choice. But then Sheinberg was very happy with the script. So for a while, Dorothy and I were his pets. The Sheinbergs had us to dinner and explained how important it was that his wife, Lorraine, go out on the boat in the sequel that to rescue the kids, that she, you know, was not on the boat in the first picture, but wanted to be on the boat in the second picture.
Mm-hmm.
So Dorothy and I said, fine, sure, if that's what you want. I mean, it was kind of a feminist point, and we kind of thought, well, why not? So the following Monday, we told Zanuck that this is what Sid wanted in the rewrite, and he said, over my dead body. So had I had more experience on how to operate in a bureaucracy, I would have known what to do. But I didn't, and I didn't. Obviously, what I needed to do was get the two guys in the room together and say, okay, you're giving me conflicting instructions. What do you want? Now, Zanuck would have been very angry at me for requesting that meeting, but I think he would have forgiven me. Instead, what happened was we turned in the next draft without Lorraine on the boat, and Sid never met my eyes in the commissary again. So that was not a good thing. The situation was further complicated by Verna Fields, who was at that point probably the best editor on the West Coast. And she had done such a good job on the first Jaws that she actually thought she should have been hired to direct the sequel. Again, Zanuck over my dead body. I don't know why he didn't want her, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. And she became a vice president at Universal, who was in charge of making sure that things were properly edited before they were released and that kind of thing. And she was very friendly with Dorothy and me, but behind our backs was operating to get the job. She would look at dailies back in Studio City and say, I don't see how this is going to cut. I'm sure John knows, has a way of cutting it, but I don't really see how. So if the best editor on the West Coast is saying she doesn't see it's, how it's going to cut, it shook the confidence of further of Sid Sheinberg mm-hmm. and the executives at Universal who were looking at the dailies. And it became an issue. There was I had crossed the line inadvertently in one shot, and it became an issue that, gee, he doesn't know how to cover a scene. Well, clearly I did. I mean, I had done several pictures where people were always looking the right way in close-ups. And I had a solution for it. I needed to shoot an insert where a piece of rope went around a cleat that would have enabled me to use that footage. But at any rate, they don't want you to shoot inserts on a big picture. They want to do those in post when mm-hmm. you need them, right? So I fired an actress in a small part and replaced her with somebody not so good. So I made enough mistakes that combined with the power struggle between the guys at the top and Verna's maneuvering, the day came when a Learjet landed on Martha's Vineyard, and the next day I was fired and on my way to Rome to lick my wounds. So it was a huge, crushing thing in my life. I mean, I can talk about it kind of calmly and ironically now, but it was a big deal. I mean, I worked very hard. I mean, I'd spent almost a year on it, working, you know, getting the script. And mm-hmm. I mean, our contribution to the script was gigantic, you know. So there is a book called Hancock on Hancock by Michael Doyle. And it's the whole story is covered in great detail in that, if anyone really wants to get into the nitty gritty. And I'm quite indiscreet, so it's fun to read.
Well, I'll have to seek that out. I wasn't even aware of that one, so I'm gonna. You've given me an idea for some reading material. Yeah. I can imagine how hard that must have been, because it's an entire year of your life that could have been spent with something, some other project that actually did come to fruition, and then you've spent all of that time, you know, for something that just really came to nothing. And I can't.
Well, imagine. It raised questions about it. Was I any good? Could I do action? I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do it is I had gotten from Bang That I'm Slowly kind of, I felt typed as warm and human, and I didn't feel warm and human. I wanted to, you know, do violent action, and it was a chance to do that. So, and I felt entirely equipped to do it, you know. So, yeah, it raised questions about me. I mean, I immediately did another picture, but, I mean, it didn't kill my career, but it was a big setback, you know.
Well, I'm sure, you know, even if not professionally, then personally, it would be a setback because, like you said, it's tough on both ends of the spectrum. So I can imagine what an ordeal that would have been.
It did do one thing for me personally, which is it made me think, this is not the kind of picture that I went into this business to do. And perhaps I had no business, even as a, you know, being smart business-wise, I had no business agreeing to do it. And that I needed to get back to the kind of things that I wanted to do. So Dorothy and I took a second mortgage on our house and took a year or so or more to research and write a picture called Weeds about a prison drama group in San Quentin that eventually got on with Nick Nolte as the lead, and a picture I'm very proud of. But that was more the kind of thing that I wanted to do. You know, they say do one for them and then one for yourself, one for them and one for yourself. And that was what was in the back of my head when I agreed to do Jaws 2.
Yeah, because if you'd been able to stay on the production and it had done well, then you would have been able to have the freedom to get financing for whatever you wanted to do. Yeah.
Well, there was no way it could not have done well.
I mean, that's true.
Yes, right. I mean, it would have been impossible to ruin it. I had quite a different vision visually of the island. And some people say that became an issue, but it really didn't. I mean, what I saw was that Amity Island needed to be in kind of post-traumatic condition, that it needed to have suffered economically from the first shark attack.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff needed to be haunted by that, and that we had buildings boarded up, and we went for the first Jaws was shot in kind of American Technicolor look. I mean, you know, bright colors and cheeriness. And
yes.
And we were working for the sequel with a much bluer, desaturated look, kind of a much grimmer, classier look, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought that was a good idea until they didn't. And
Were the actors pretty much in solidarity with you? I mean, were you weren't having any trouble with any of the actors, I assume, other than the casting that we talked about earlier?
No, I wasn't having any trouble with any of the actors. No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Roy Scheider, I've heard subsequently that he did not want to do it, did not want to do the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not the impression that I got. He seemed to be there, we're doing his best. And I think he actually came to physical blows with my successor,
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, he could be cranky, but we got along. I got along very much with Sid's wife, Lorraine, too. I liked her. We're still friends on Facebook. I mean, the problem was Sid and Verna, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they obviously wielded a lot of power at that point at Universal, obviously. So, kind of the way the pecking order, as it were, I guess.
I had got the impression that Zanuck and Brown fought very hard for me and lost, but I mean that was that's what Dick told me at any rate. I've remained friends with Dick and David both. So we didn't work together again, but we would have lunches and things.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that some of the script that Dorothy had written for the script that you guys two put together, some of that makes it into the novelization, which I think is I guess you can smile a little bit.
Yeah.
Knowing that some of your work is there.
Yeah. Oh, but what a disaster. I mean, yes, I'm smiling. There's some smiling, but it's mostly not.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
What I meant to say was you can take some measure of pleasure, I guess, in the fact that not all of your work was completely jettisoned and forgotten, that there are elements.
Also, they used it in a kind of screwed up form. You know, I mean, I was very proud of that there's a water skiing thing. And that wasn't Dorothy. That was me entirely writing. Mm-hmm. So, and I had two water skiers, and it was really, really exciting. And I felt that they screwed that up. And the way Dorothy and I went, they sent us down to Acapulco to try to devise an ending and also to learn how to freshen up our scuba diving skills so that I could shoot underwater. And we sat on a balcony overlooking the bay there and listed the ways that we could kill the shark and ended up by deciding to electrocute it. So, I mean, I would have done it differently. I would have done it, I think, more spectacularly than they did. But, I mean, they did keep, they kept what we did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just botched it a little. Also, the huge mistake they made was firing Ricky Schroeder, who I'm unhappy with him politically now, but boy, what a what a fabulous little actor he was. He was so full emotionally and really brilliant and charming, and the picture needed that. They needed that kind of jeopardy to somebody really alive and endearing, and they flattened that out with the casting. You know, I felt an act of cruelty. It was like the new broom sweeps clean. And anybody that I had hired and was crazy about tended to be canned. So,
yeah, it seems like they were just doing that out of retaliation or something. It seems real petty when you think about it.
Yeah, self-defeating on their part.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's I know at the time that teenage comedies and movies involving teenagers were a fad at the time. So the end product of Jaws 2 resembles a meshing of, you know, the original Jaws with the teen movie.
Right.
Yeah. And that's,
well, Dorothy had a knack for that. She was able to do those teen dialogue real.
Uh-huh.
She was good at that. Yeah. And, but they just, you know, you replace jetliner with 747 and you make small alterations in a script that make it your own in a kind of evil way.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's well, I'm just glad that some of your work survives in the novelization, that it's not, like I said, that it's, that people can actually, and if there's anybody listening or watching this, you can seek it out. Seek out the novelization of Jaws 2, which is quite different from the finished film, and you will get a sense of your of Mr. Hancock's work.
There. What are all these DVDs behind you here?
Oh, I do review physical media. I do a podcast once a month where I cover all the latest releases. And so those are, that's my library of, I have a carefully curated library of films because I'm a big movie buff, and I appreciate the artistry and the artists who, gave us this work, and, like yourself. And
what do you do with the ones that you no longer want?
I usually just pass them on to people who may have an interest in them. My son is a physical media collector as well, so he's usually a willing recipient of anything that I don't want. But yes.
I just purged my library the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm really you know, excited about what's going on. I mean, I know we're definitely in the last phase of physical media, but there's still a lot of great films that are coming out on 4K and Blu-ray that are the quality is, you know, better than we've ever seen before. And so that's generally what I'm doing, is curating a library of films in the best possible quality. I know a lot of, there are some people who are into the retro thing where they collect VHS tapes, and I just don't understand any of that. I want things in the best possible quality.
I see you've got a couple VHS. Oh, no, those are books.
Yep. I have some reference books. So if I'm doing an interview and there's something that I need to confirm that I can't get a quick confirmation online, I'll just grab a book and I'll say, let me check that. So I've got to. I also, on my podcast, I do occasionally music related podcasts. And so I always have access to Billboard charts in case there are. or that, and because those are things that they're behind a paywall, so I've actually got the charts there, so if I need them I can just grab them.
That's good.
So yeah, but physical media is and they did a great Blu-ray of Let's Scare Jessica to Death a couple of years ago. I believe you
they
contributed
did,
commentary on that.
I'm trying to get one out on weeds. You know what happened when Dino De Laurentiis, his company, went belly up, is they lost the negative.
Oh, wow.
So that there has never been a DVD or a Blu-ray of that. So we're trying to track down who owns it now, and I've spent more than I should on New York lawyers trying to determine ownership, but it sold to Canal Plus, sold it to Royal, sold it to it, so that it's... They came back. It's impossible to determine who owns it. The current hope is that MGM owns it, and we're trying to get word from them.
Yeah.
Because we have found the negative. Technicolor actually has the negative.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to, get somebody to put that out. I'm also, I've got a screenplay. I'm still attempting to work. I have a screenplay about a New York detective who falls in love with a female serial killer called A Love Story that I'm trying to get on. And I've got some very powerful, positive reactions from people, managers and agents on the West Coast. So I'm trying to get that on.
Oh, that's admirable. I'm so glad. I was going to ask if you had any projects in the hopper, as it were, or, because, people sometimes, I'm a big fan of working, just because I enjoy working. So I get that.
Me too.
I think it is engaging to the mind and the spirit, and it's a good thing health wise. And so that's admirable. So I'm glad you're keeping on. I hope you get that project off the ground. I'd love to see that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with it. I mean, it really came out well, and I don't know that I'll direct it. It's probably too expensive a picture for somebody to put up money. It probably, it's like $25 million. I don't know that anybody's going to put that up for an 84-year-old man. But we can get somebody good to do it, and that's what we're working at.
Yeah, well, it's your work, so it'll be great to have one of your scripts.
Unless it isn't. I mean, I've never turned my scripts over to anybody else to direct, so maybe it'll be an extremely unhappy experience, but I'm willing to take it on.
Yeah, well, anything's worth a try at least once, I suppose. Yeah. I keep hoping that Bang the Drum Slowly will get a Blu-ray release. Speaking of Blu-rays, that is a film that's in DVD.
Has it never been released on Blu-ray?
Not that I'm aware of. If it has, I have missed it. Or it may have been released over, in the UK or something, but never a domestic Blu-ray release. And that's And Paramount's been doing a good job with their archives, so I'm surprised that they didn't do a 50th last year when it celebrated its birthday.
Yeah.
So I know there was the comedian Gilbert Gottfried on his podcast. He used to quote dialogue from that movie, and he would always sing the theme song. And then, so he was a tremendous fan of Bang the Drum Slowly, and a lot of and I am too. It's a great movie, and it just deserves to be seen by people. And I just think it's a real travesty that it hasn't gotten a high definition remaster. So yeah.
Well, maybe it will. I would imagine so.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll get asked to do a commentary if it happens.
It was fun doing the commentary for Let's Scare Jessica to Death. Mm-hmm. Probably my best friend is the producer Bill Bottolato, and he was the line producer on that.
Oh, and great. So
we did a joint commentary on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's that's a good looking transfer, and I was so glad because it was so hard to find. I mean, well, the DVD had gone out of print, and I think it was going for exorbitant prices on eBay at one point before the Blu-ray came out. So yeah, it was really, there's definitely a cult who love that film, and so
it's shocking to me. Yeah. Yeah,
and it must be interesting when you do a film and you put it out there and just to see whether it lands or not, and then here 53 years later you're talking about something that you did.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's very strange. I mean, I get, flown places for midnight screenings of Jessica, where people turn up in witches' outfits and hoodies with vampire teeth. And I mean, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that's I'm glad that it continues to have an afterlife, because it deserves to. It certainly has a. It's very atmospheric and well directed by you. So say that. Yes. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I certainly appreciate you agreeing to come on and chat about the story behind Jaws too. Because a film historian friend of mine, he joins me from time to time, and he had suggested that we do something about Jaws 2, and we had talked about the problems that you had, and I said, why don't I just reach out to Mr. Hancock and see if he can tell his version of the story.
So, well, I'm glad.